This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. In the year since the deadly shootings at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, Massachusetts lawmakers have pushed for a number of new regulations designed to keep guns out of the hands of violent people.
Among the proposals, a law that would require the state to forward some mental health records to a federal background check database. Another would require anyone applying for a gun license to agree to release their mental health records to local police.
Critics of those proposals, including some mental health advocates, say they're too broad and wrongly stigmatize mental illness. Joining us now is State Representative David Linsky, who is the lead sponsor of legislation meant to tighten the state's gun laws. And Representative Linsky, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Also in the studio is Bill Fisher. He teaches criminology at UMass Lowell and psychiatry at the UMass Medical School. And Bill Fisher, good to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And Representative Linsky, let me start with you. Your bill, I want to be clear here, it includes a number of proposals. It's not just focus on mental health, such as requiring background checks on the purchase of all guns, even private sales, limiting the number of rounds in a magazine, requiring gun owners to store assault rifles at shooting ranges rather than at homes, among other issues. But just for the purposes of this part of the conversation, I want to focus on the part of the proposal that would require anyone applying for a gun license to waive his or her privacy rights and release their mental health records. Tell us why that's an important component in this package of proposals.
We have a background check system in Massachusetts right now that really gives a false sense of security to the people in Massachusetts. People think we're doing a background check, but all that we're really doing when someone applies for a gun permit in Massachusetts is seeing whether or not they've ever been involuntarily committed to a state mental health facility. That's a very tiny number of people. A whole lot more people out there, first off, have voluntarily been committed or have a serious mental health issue, serious mental health disorder, but they've never spent a day in a mental health hospital but have been undergoing treatment. Those people pass the current background check law in Massachusetts. And quite frankly, we have an obligation to make sure that people who have a propensity for violence, who have a propensity for a dangerous act, undergo something of a background check before we issue them a gun permit.
But let me stop you there, because do we know? I mean, isn't it sort of a question of debate? Someone with a mental health disorder is necessarily more liable to commit an act of violence. Is that, in fact, a connection that we know to be true?
They're not necessarily more liable to commit an act of violence. But we also know that there is a significant number of people out there, by reason of mental illness, who should not have access to firearms because they can be a danger to either themselves — the suicide rates are enormous among these people — or to other people. And we have an obligation as a society to make sure that they can't get their hands on firearms. Mm-hmm.
As you know, the critics will point out that this measure might be casting too broad a net, that it raises the sort of this idea that anyone with a mental health disorder or, you know, a record of seeing a therapist, something as benign as marriage counseling, for example, could be deemed ineligible to get a firearms license.
They're not going to be ineligible to get a firearm license. All it is providing a little bit more information to the local police chief or the local licensing authority in factoring in all of the different factors that are out there in deciding whether or not that person is a suitable person to have a firearm. It doesn't make you ineligible because you saw a marriage therapist. But it might make you ineligible if you've threatened to commit suicide on numerous occasions, and that's in your mental health records, but you've never actually been committed to a mental health institution.
Well, listeners, we want you to join the conversation. Could disclosing mental health records reduce the number of deaths and injuries by guns? Or is it too broad to look at as mental health records as predictors of violence? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Bill Fisher, let me come to you. You've studied sort of this intersection of mental health and crime. Do you think proposals like what Representative Linsky is talking about is a good idea? Will it be effective?
Well, I want to begin, I think, by congratulating Senator Linsky on
Representative, right?
Excuse me, Representative Linsky. Did I give you a
House is better than
House,
the Senate.
Yes, okay, fine. Representative Linsky, for crafting legislation that brings us into the 21st century. I think those of us who have looked at the evolution of the mental health system over the years understand that while the Department of Mental Health plays a very, very significant role in dealing with some of the Commonwealth's most seriously mentally ill individuals, they are no longer the locus of involuntary hospitalization that they were back, for example, when the Brady Bill was crafted. And now a person in Massachusetts who needs to be involuntarily hospitalized can be admitted to probably 50 or so different local general hospitals, as well as private psychiatric hospitals such as McLean Hospital. And I think Senator, I keep wanting to make him a senator. Representative Linsky's bill is it takes us really into the 21st century, and also brings us, I think, up to speed in terms of kind of where many other states are, including states that such as Texas, for example, where one would expect that guns would be much more accessible to everyone. So I think it has real promise. Whether or not these restrictions will actually limit the levels of gun violence among people who have some sort of psychiatric disorder, I think, is really an open question, and I think needs to be a research focus. When we think,
That's sort of a big question, though. Do you think we have the research to suggest that it is a good idea or that it could be effective?
Well, what the research shows, I think, if we go back to what gun control legislation did, for example, back in the 70s with the Bartley-Fox law, it limited violence to some extent. One of the things that I have colleagues who are currently looking at this kind of issue in a number of states, and I've seen presentations. My friend Jeffrey Swanson at Duke has been working in this area. And so far, it would appear that a major impact of this kind of legislation. Representative Linsky made the point that people who are dangerous not only to others but also to themselves, that there's been some reduction, it appears, in gun-related suicide. So,
And that's a big point because, I was looking at numbers just this morning. About half of the 38,000 suicides in the U.S. each year are committed with firearms. David Linsky, I think you made that point that this is also aimed at addressing that problem, right?
Absolutely. Over half of the gun deaths every year in this country are suicides. Hmm. And all of the statistics show that if you have a gun in your house, you are many more times likely to commit suicide or have a suicide in your house than if you don't have a gun in your house. Mm. And clearly, it makes it easier to commit suicide if you have a gun available.
Let me introduce another voice into this conversation, Tim O'Leary. He's deputy director of the Massachusetts Association for Mental Health. And Tim O'Leary, good to have you on Radio Boston. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Anthony.
I know you have particular concerns about this legislation. Why don't you tell us sort of what's on top of your list?
Right. Well, we support that part of the legislation that would bring Massachusetts into the 20th century by having all involuntary commitments reported to the federal registry system, as well as the creation of a state registry system. Where Representative Linsky and I part company is the idea that anyone who wants to apply for a gun license should sign a waiver to have his or her mental health records for the past, I think the last time I looked at the legislation, went back 20 years.
And what's wrong with that, Tim?
We see that as going to discourage people from getting treatment. And the example that I like to use is two classes of people. One would be the initial responders to the Newtown tragedy, police officers who respond to horrific situations, may find themselves weeks later waking up with night sweats, whatever, decide, should I go get some counseling for this traumatic event that I've experienced? Are they going to go if they now know that those records are going to become available when it's time to renew their gun license? Same was true, for example, to the Iraqis, so people coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan. We're encouraging all of them to get the treatment they need for the post-traumatic stress. Many of them coming back, they're well familiar with firearms, the safe use of them. Are they going to get the treatment that they may or may not need if they suddenly learn these records are available?
So, Tim O'Leary, I want to give David Linsky a chance to respond to that. So there's Tim O'Leary, David Linsky, talking about it might discourage people from seeking the help that they need or sort of wrongly punish them for getting the help that they need.
Well, clearly, anybody who should or needs to be seeing a mental health provider should go out and see them. And we don't want to discourage anybody. That's not the intent of this legislation, nor is it the intent to tell a police chief who's the local licensing authority that they should deny a permit in that type of situation, because they shouldn't. However, if somebody has, you know, a significant risk of suicide, the odds are they've never been involuntarily committed. And because so many few people have been committed to a mental health institution. But by placing a firearm into the hands of that person, you're basically, encouraging them to go out and either commit suicide or harm somebody else. You know, applying for a gun permit, that's a voluntary act. Mm-hmm. Nobody forces you to go out and apply for a gun permit. That's a choice that you make. I just see this as giving more information to the police chiefs or the local licensing authority, and that they can use it as one factor of many factors in deciding whether or not that's a suitable person to have a gun. The state of Hawaii has been doing this. They've had great success. They have the lowest gun violence rate in the country.
Mm. Tim O'Leary, what about that? And what about this argument that this could prevent suicides because it could show that people who have a history of depression or have attempted to commit suicide in the past would be better off without having a gun put in their hands?
I would respond a couple of ways. Number one, the legislation targets everyone who has gone for any kind of mental health counseling. So it's assuming that anyone with a mental illness is going to commit suicide or is such a high risk of suicide that they need to be prohibited from getting a gun. The research doesn't support that. Many of the people who do commit suicide have an untreated mental illness, but gun suicide in Massachusetts is among one of the lowest in the nation because we have very tough and stringent gun laws. Secondly, I would say that dumping this information on the chief of police, I can predict, with no disrespect to police chiefs, as soon as they see a compilation of mental health records on an applicant, they're just going to deny it. Mm. They're not going to start wading through paper with all the other work they have to do. And thirdly, I would say this. Regardless of how you feel about the Supreme Court's decision on gun ownership, it's not a privilege, it's a right. And so while the filing of an application is voluntary, it's not like a driver's license where the courts have said driving is a privilege and you can put all these kinds of restrictions on even applying for a driver's license or the right to drive. Telling a person that 20 years of mental health records is going to have to be released before you can even apply for a weapon, which the court has said is a constitutional right, is simply not going to withstand constitutional muster.
Well, let me, I want to go over to Bill Fisher because, Tim O'Leary, you put your finger on sort of one interesting idea, and that is police chiefs as sort of being the arbiters here. And Bill Fisher, do police chiefs have the training, the necessary training? And I don't mean any disrespect either to local police officers, but do they have the necessary training to look at mental health records and make essentially a mental health adjudication around this issue?
That's a really good question, and I think there are two points. One is that I think that if this additional information is going to be given to them, now currently understand that all they need to do is go on the computer and do a query with the Department of Mental Health, who will tell them whether or not they've ever been committed to a Department of Mental Health facility. Now they're getting information from all sorts of places and from all sorts of settings about all sorts of things. I think there's going to have to be two things, really. One is I think there's going to have to be some sort of structure put in place that will interpret this kind of information for them. And I think there's going to be questions about that and how that's going to work. And I think that you're right that I think police chiefs are going to err on the side of caution. The other thing I would point out is I'm working now currently with one of my PhD students at UMass Lowell, and we're about to launch a little survey with the Mass Association of Chiefs of Police looking at how police officers police chiefs actually make these decisions. And we've had a couple of preliminary conversations, and one chief made a point that he's been the chief of police of a suburb for about 15 years, and the community has about 14,000 people. And when he does queries to DMH about whether or not a person is suitable to get a gun permit, he's never had a hit. However, he's denied people 14 or 15 times based on the fact that his officers have been to their homes on any number of occasions. He knows that there are serious mental health and substance abuse problems in that home, but there's never been an arrest or a commitment. And so he's determined that these people are not suitable to get a firearm permit. And he's been challenged in court on a number of occasions and been told and he's been upheld each time. Larger cities where police chiefs may not be as aware of the citizenry and their problems, it's hard to tell. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the police chiefs or the people within their organizations who make these determinations really are a critical node in this process.
Clearly. And forgive me for jumping in here. I want to get a couple of callers into this conversation because we've got a bunch of them lined up. Let's go to Patrick, who's calling from Leominster. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a vet. My wife is in the mental health field. And the idea that someone could grab my mental health records and somebody could make a decision on what the Supreme Court has ruled is a constitutional right is abhorrent. The idea that someone has the right to tell me that I'm not allowed to have a gun because I may kill myself is just ridiculous. Some people don't agree with this, but I believe suicide is a choice. And even if I didn't, none of the laws have been passed in 10, 15 years have stopped gun crime in Massachusetts. And limiting people's constitutional rights just because they may have an issue that they went actually sought help for is just, it's awful.
All right, Patrick, we have your point. I'm glad you called in and expressed that. Let me go to Chris, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out that it seems like a lot of the conversation and discussion around the gun issues are around sort of solutions that seem very reactive. And I was wondering if anyone could comment on any sort of work that's being done or solutions around being more proactive, so looking at more sort of societal factors and what sort of things may lead people or predispose people toward violent actions in the first place.
Chris, thanks for putting that on the table. David Linsky, do you want to respond to Chris?
Well, of course, and thank you, Chris. You have an excellent point. We have over 32,000 people a year die as a result of gun deaths in this country every year. That's way too many people. And every type of gun death is different than the others. There are a lot of different types out there, and each one of those types requires a different solution. What we're talking about here, as far as the mental health records and the mental health reporting, is one small piece of a much larger puzzle. And quite frankly, I think that what we're doing or what I'm proposing about the mental health records, it could probably result in maybe a 5% reduction in gun deaths per year. But if you look at some of the other solutions that I'm proposing, if you add them all up, I honestly think that we can really cut down on gun deaths by about 50% a year. Hmm. And I think that is something.
And you're talking
really
about the proposals that are very much outside of the sort of this discussion around the mental health.
Absolutely. This
issues.
Is one small yeah. piece of a much bigger puzzle, and I thank you for bringing that up, Chris.
Chris, thank you for that call. And that's David Linsky. He's a state representative, Democrat from Natick. He's the lead sponsor of legislation meant to tighten the state's gun laws. And Representative Linsky, thanks so much for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Bill Fisher, he teaches criminology at UMass Lowell and psychiatry at the UMass Medical School. Bill Fisher, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And Tim O'Leary, deputy director of the Massachusetts Association for Mental Health, thank you for your input as well. Very grateful to you.
Thank you, Anthony.
It's an important issue, gentlemen. I think we just made to start on this conversation. Listeners, sorry we didn't get to you if you called in. The conversation continues at RadioBoston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, new federal guidelines for medical first responders. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.